Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We are all negotiators, and you may not realize it, but we're striking deals all day long, every day. What movie to watch, who's going to do what chores, and then there are things like how much are we going to pay for that house and how much money you're going to get paid for in your new job, and so on and so on. So if you're a good neighbor, a good negotiator, then life can be really good for you. If you're a bad negotiator, then you should learn how to become a better negotiator. And so we're joined by the negotiator's negotiator, Lawrence Susskind. His latest book is Good for You, Great for Me, Finding Trading Zones and Winning at Win-Win Negotiations. Lawrence, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much.
So when you look at the news, you hear about negotiations all the time. You know, negotiations in Washington, D.C. We've got this negotiation that's went on with this Taliban swap with Sergeant Bo. We've also negotiations happening with what's going to go on with this carbon issue with the EPA. So when you listen to the news and you watch news and you wonder, about the negotiation process, if people they had read your book and used your tactics and techniques, that we may get a better job done?
Well, I must say that I often imagine that. I know that you got to know a lot about a particular situation to do well in negotiation. But really, there are some principles, and sometimes it's painful, in my view, to watch people just ignore some of the things that 30 years of research on the part of a lot of people have really brought us to the understanding of.
So one of the things you talk about is you know, the win-win. And we talk about we're all trying to get to a win-win situation. But that may not be good enough for folks. You want to be the win and win for yourself. You know, they get a little bit, but you get a lot.
Well, in about 1980 or so, there was a shift in the way people thought about negotiation. Up until then, everybody treated negotiation the way you would if you were buying or selling a used car, which is if you're the seller, you want as much as you can. Every dollar you get is a dollar the person on the other side loses. So that approach, the win-lose negotiation, was really what people thought about when they thought of the word negotiation. Then in about 1980, there was a wonderful little book written called Getting to Yes. And it basically pointed out that, well, if there was a way to help each side achieve what they needed to achieve, it would be a lot better. More of the time, people would get more of what they wanted. And instead of thinking about every bit of gain to you as a loss to the other side, let's think of win-win. Not everybody gets everything, but everybody does better than they would if there was no agreement. And suddenly the focus shifted to we need to be more cooperative. So the language of win-win took root. And people since then have been saying, win-win, win-win. Let's find a way. You get what you want. I get what I want. And in fact, if you go back and look at what that writing and the research then and since talks about, it wasn't that just be nice, just be cooperative, and everybody will get what they want. What it said really was, if you work hard to create as much value as possible, then it's going to be easier to divide it up and for both sides to do better. That you're going to have both a cooperative part of negotiation, which is make the pie larger, and then you're going to have the competitive part, which is who gets how much of the pie. But it will be easier for everybody to do well if you created more value. But somehow, in the last decades or so, people forgot that there's a competitive part where you divide up this terrific additional value you created. So in my new book, Good for You, Great for Me, I've tried to go back and remind people that first you try to create value through cooperative moves, and then you're going to divide that value through competitive moves. But there are ways to do it that don't ruin the relationship, so that if you're going to negotiate with the same people again, things will still be on an even keel.
So if you have a supplier, or if you're a supplier, if you have someone that you do business with frequently, you want to get the best deal possible, but you're not going to war to overwhelm and destroy your negotiating opponent. You want to get a great deal for yourself, but you want those guys to be back when you come right back around 6 months from now.
Yeah, and it's not just that you want to try to do what you can. Really, there are these moves that create value. For example, if I want to sell you something and I'm going to get a commission at the point in which the sale is recorded, but you don't have as much money as I want you to pay for what I'm selling, as far as I'm concerned, hey, you could stretch the payment over 5 years. Fine with me. Just buy it now. I'll get my commission. You'll have more money over the next several years. So instead of just negotiating price, if we negotiated price and terms of payment, we'll both be better off. And going back to the point you made earlier, every time I look at negotiations, I say, well, why didn't they link more than the one issue that they're talking about? Why didn't they say, we'll do this and that'll help you, and we'll do that, and that'll help me. And by doing those two things, we'll have created more value, making it easier to divvy up the value that we have. And the person who's working the hardest to create more value by listening to what the other side needs, finding a low-cost way of responding to it, then has more leverage in saying, and I should get a bigger piece of the pie because I did more to help create it.
What do you do when the person you're negotiating is not acting in good faith?
Yeah, and it happens. And, I wish I knew sometimes how to tell whether someone's just pretending that they're nuts and they're going crazy in the hope that I'll just give up, or whether they really are crazy and there's no way we're going to be able to negotiate something.
Or they're trying to wear you down.
In an effective way. Yeah. I don't know what's a tactic and what's real sometimes. And one of the ways of, and that I talk about at some length in the book, at smoking this out, is to understand that almost everybody, no matter who's negotiating with whom, has what I call a back table. Somebody who's going to judge how they did, someone who has to give them permission, right? You're the salesperson, you got to call home and say, if I give these guys a special deal, I can sell 1,000 instead of 100. Is that okay? That's your back table. And when someone's acting in a way that you think is irresponsible or out of control or not in good faith, you put several offers on the table. You say, here's offer number one. If you do this and this, I'll do that and that. That'll be the deal. Wait. Here's a second offer. You go back and talk to your back table and come back and talk to me. Because what you want is to make that person be accountable for considering your alternatives and in the reasonable way in which they're offered. And sometimes by putting multiple proposals forward, they have to go check with their back table. Now, if there's, if a person's just trying to dupe you, as you said, beat you down, you put up these offers and you say, get back to me. Here's these offers. I'll live with either one. I can't quite understand what's most important to you. So here's package one. Here's package two. I can live with either one. Call me back tomorrow. Talk to your people.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break. But when I come back, I want to ask you about tactics when it's time to negotiate a salary. I just got offered a brand new job. They say, what kind of salary do you want? Do I go high? Do I go low? Do I go mid? I want to ask you. So this is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line is Lawrence Susskind. He is the co-founder of the Program on Negotiations at Harvard Law School and at the Ford Foundation, professor of urban and environmental planning. He's an expert. He's a negotiator's negotiator. He's got a new book comes out tomorrow, Good for You, Great for Me, Finding the Trading Zone and Winning at Win-Win Negotiations. So, Lawrence, I'm getting a new job, hypothetically, theoretically. You never know, though. And they say, okay, you've got the job. Let's talk salary. How do I get the best deal for me?
Well, it is a crucial question, and it's on a lot of people's minds, including a lot of my students at MIT who are graduating, and they say, I got the big job negotiation. What's the best advice you can give me? And my argument or my suggestion is always remember that the other side has various interests. And if you can ask good questions and listen carefully, you should be able to negotiate a package, not just the salary issue. Now, many of my students don't understand this. They say, well, the big deal is how much money I get, right? I said, well, what about how soon they'll consider you for a raise? What about who you'll be working with? What about when you start work? What about a moving allowance? What, and all these other things. So most people want to know, do I bid high? Do I bid low? That's not where to start. Where you start is to say, look, potential employer, I really like to work here. I have a bunch of concerns. When I start, who I work for, what kind of work you give me, how soon you'll consider me for a promotion, what other kind of benefits you pay your people. One of the things students are afraid to ask, but I urge them to ask, which is, well, look, I'd love to work here. What's the most you've paid to someone with my background in this position? Which will truly startle them. But it's a factual question. They may put you off, but you should ask. What you're looking for is a way to make the case for what you think you're worth compared to what they normally pay, and to find all the things that are valuable to you that you can put into a package. So don't just focus on a high number or a low number. Tell them honestly, I want to work for you. Don't say, whatever you'll pay me. Say, well, what's the most you've paid someone with my background for this job? I'd be interested to know that. And then they'll respond in a variety of ways, probably won't answer your question directly. They'll say, well, we'll offer you this much. And you say, well, if you'll offer me that much, what would it take for you to offer me a little bit more in terms of other kinds of things? Can you help me with, as I said, moving costs? Can you fund any kind of additional professional education while I'm working for you? What's the soonest you can consider me for a promotion, and so on? So don't just focus on a number. Listen to the interests of the other side. Be clear about all the things that are important to you, and you should be able to negotiate a good package.
Well, even before you get to that negotiating table, what about opening negotiations with yourself and asking yourself what it is that you actually want?
It's a crucial point. I'm so glad you raised it. Most people, if I say you're going out that door to go do the most important negotiation in your life, are you prepared? Their mental checklist is real short. Their mental checklist focuses on what do I want? But that's really not what you should be asking yourself. What you should be asking yourself is, what does no agreement leave me with? Because offers better than that should be taken seriously. If you don't know what your walkaway point is, then you're not prepared. And so often, people don't do that negotiation with themselves, as you describe it, before they walk out. They say, well, let's wait and see what they offer. That's too late. You need to have talked to yourself really carefully before any negotiation and say, what will I say no to? Well, what's my next best option if I walk away from this? That's the key to preparation.
If you've got a question, you want to join the conversation, we're talking about tricks of negotiation, how to be a star negotiator for your company or even for yourself. We're speaking with Lawrence Susskind. He's an expert on this. His new book comes out tomorrow, Good For You, Great For Me. Our phone number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Is fairness a factor in negotiations?
It's a factor in a lot of negotiations. For example, if I am a neighborhood and I'm negotiating with a developer, and the developer's got the city on their side, they're going to come in, they're going to build something, and it's going to adversely affect me, I don't have a whole lot of clout, but fairness is an important issue for me to raise. So my neighborhood group sits with the developer and says, you know, what you're proposing, it's good for the city in general, probably, but it's terrible for us in this neighborhood. Don't you think it would be fair for you to compensate some of us who will be adversely affected by what you're doing? That an argument about fairness can be a source of leverage, particularly for a less powerful party in a negotiation, can't always win on the basis of it, but I certainly think it should be used as a point of leverage by those who feel they have less power in a negotiation.
Let's get a caller on the air. Bob has called in. Bob, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a professor at the University of Incarnate Word, and I teach business and leadership and organizational development and all sorts of things along those lines. And in everywhere in my classes, I require my students to purchase Fisher and Urey's book, Getting to Yes, which your guest alluded to earlier in terms of some of the seminal work that was done in negotiation. My question is, in terms of the new book that is being spoken of, is there anything there that either adds substantively to Fisher and Urey's book, or is there some new tack, or is it more of a freshening, if you will, of the ideas that he brought to bear, those guys brought to bear? So I appreciate the call, and I'll take my answer offline. Thanks.
All right, Bob, thanks for that call. So Lawrence?
Sure. Well, if you look at the book and you look at the jacket, you'll see Bill Urey is the first one who's offered an endorsement of the book. He's a good friend, and we've talked a lot about this. I think Fisher and Urey did a great job of getting people to understand that the other side has interests, and you shouldn't just listen to their stated position. You should try to ask questions to find out why. And from that, you can move from zero-sum or win-lose to some form of win-win negotiation. I think after 30 years and doing a lot of research in the negotiation field, I think what we've come up with is that's a great starting point. Now, remember that each person has a back table. Let's add that to the discussion. Remember that creating value requires a series of exploratory moves. Let's add that to the conversation beyond what Fisher and Urey talked about with regard to interest. Let's talk about uncertainty and how that ought to come in to the way in which we make a deal. Let's try to make slightly more complex, or what we call contingent, elements of a negotiation. That goes beyond getting to yes. Let's remember that people are part of organizations, and their organizations constrain what they can and can't do. That adds another dimension that getting to yes didn't get to talk about. So what we've tried to add are five or six concepts that have emerged as people have tried to get better at doing win-win negotiation. Again, I think a lot of people picked up on the idea that cooperation's got to be part of negotiation. Negotiation can help you do better. Now what I'm trying to do is to say, okay, and on top of that, how do we include the competitive part of negotiation to go with the cooperative part? So it may be claiming too much, but I'd like to see Good For You, Great For Me as the next book after the caller's students have read Getting to Yes.
So a win-win outcome of a negotiation may not be good enough. I mean, your boss could be telling you, you know, I could have gotten that deal. Anyone could have gotten that deal. What could you do that would be even better? What makes you special?
Yep. And I'm afraid that most people will find when they come back to the home office, no matter how well they did, someone's going to say, well, why didn't you do better? And one of the ways of protecting yourself is part of that preparation. You asked me a question about it before, talking to yourself before you go out there. As part of preparation, people should talk to the folks they report to and say, I'm headed out to do this negotiation. Here's my assessment of the situation. Here's what I think is the minimum that we should get, or I should get, or I should walk away. Do you agree with that? And then anything above that, that's going to be a big plus, right? So as part of preparation, since negotiation is often an organizational task, if you include checking in with the person you're going to have to come back and talk to at the end, you can have a basis for saying, no, I did really great. Because otherwise, everyone always says, why don't you do better?
You know, and putting yourself in the shoes of the person that you're negotiating with, and back to what we were talking about salary, you know, if you've finally gotten to the point where they're offering you the job and they're saying, let's talk money, the future employer has already gone through the threshold. They want to hire you. They've gone through this huge hiring issue. The whole office, the people in charge have agreed that you're the guy they want to hire. They don't want to lose you right now. So you really have more leverage than you actually think you do. But once you think about it from the side of the management, you probably realize I could probably ask for more.
It's so important what you've just said. I don't know how to underscore it enough. Most people, when they're in a negotiation, they get nervous. And they only look at things from their own perspective. Oh, what are they going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? What you're saying is absolutely essential.
I know, because I got it from your book. Good for you. Great for me. Lauren Susskind, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. You're welcome.
This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.